I think I'll sit down.
You didn't tell me how to pronounce the different place names either. You're right. Exodus chapter 14, beginning at verse 1. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Tell the Israelites to turn back and camp near Pi-Hahiroth between Migdol and the sea. They are to camp by the sea, directly opposite Baal Zephon. Pharaoh will think the Israelites are wandering around the land in confusion, hemmed in by the desert. And I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and he will pursue them. But I will gain glory for myself through Pharaoh and all his armies, and the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord." So the Israelites did this. When the king of Israel was told that the people had fled, Pharaoh and his officials changed their minds about them and said, "What have we done? We have let the Israelites go and have lost their services." So he had his chariot made ready and took his army with him. He took 600 of the best chariots, along with all the other chariots of Israel, with officers over all of them. The Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, so that he pursued the Israelites who were marching out boldly. The Egyptians, all Pharaoh's horses and chariots, horsemen and troops, pursued the Israelites and overtook them as they camped by the sea near Pi-Hahiroth, opposite Baal Zephon. As Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up, and there were the Egyptians marching after them. They were terrified and cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, "Was it because there were no graves in Egypt, that you brought us to the desert to die? What have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, 'Leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians'? It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert." Moses answered the people, "Do not be afraid. Stand firm, and you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptians you see today, you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You only need to be still." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Why are you crying out to me? Tell the Israelites to move on. Raise your staff and stretch out your hand over the sea to divide the waters so that the Israelites can go through the sea on dry ground. I will harden the heart of the Egyptians so that they will go in after them. And I will gain glory through Pharaoh and all his armies, through his chariots and his horsemen. The Egyptians will know that I am the Lord when I gain glory through Pharaoh, his chariots and his horsemen." Then the angel of the Lord, who had been travelling in front of Israel's army, withdrew and went behind them. The pillar of cloud also moved from in front and stood behind them, coming between the armies of Egypt and Israel. Throughout the night, the cloud brought darkness to one side and light to the other, so that neither went near the other all night long. Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and all that night the Lord drove the sea back with a strong east wind and turned it into dry land. The waters were divided, and the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground with a wall of water on their right and on their left. The Egyptians pursued them, and all Pharaoh's horses and chariots and horsemen followed them into the sea. During the last watch of the night, the Lord looked down from the pillar of cloud and fire at the Egyptians' army and threw them into confusion. He made the wheels of their chariots come off so that they had difficulty driving. And the Egyptians said, "Let's get away from the Israelites. The Lord is fighting for them against Egypt." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Stretch out your hand over the water so that the waters may flow back over the Egyptians and their chariots and horsemen." Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and at daybreak the sea went back to its place. The Egyptians were fleeing towards it, and the Lord swept them into the sea. The water flowed back and covered the chariots and horsemen. the entire army of Pharaoh that had been following the Israelites into the sea. Not one of them survived, but the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground with a wall of water on the right and on the left. That day, the Lord saved Israel from the hands of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians lying dead on the shore. And when the Israelites saw the great power the Lord displayed against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord and put their trust in him and in Moses, his servant.
Great, thank you. Anyone here familiar with John Piper? American pastor? I'll give you an impression. One of my favorite things, I'm not great at impressions, but this just is, just to, so you never invite me back, probably. He says, what the world needs from the church is its indomitable joy in the midst of pain and suffering. That's what he says. Yeah, amen. And he's right. He's right. I want to talk this evening about faith. And the reason that we're looking at this, and if you've got your Bibles, it's helpful to have them at, open at Exodus 14. In order to understand real faith, I was talking to someone before the service, you really need to be in a place of needing to trust God. It's very easy for us to say we trust God, but actually, most of the time we say we trust God, we're not in a position where we need to trust God. And this evening, in order to understand what faith is, we need to try and put ourselves into the shoes of these Israelites. So I want you to try and do that, okay? Imagine it's not chucking it down with rain and freezing cold. I want you to imagine that this evening you're making your way across this suffocating heat of the desert. And you're in amongst a crowd of millions. And all that people can talk about is what's been happening. Namely, the plagues of Egypt. How terrifying they were. How devastating they were. And you can't quite believe that you're free. And people wonder, where are we heading? I mean, I know we're going to the promised land, but what kind of journey is that going to be? And surely we should be going in a different direction, Moses. In the distance, as you look forward, you can see this giant pillar of cloud and fire, which is the presence of God himself. And as fearful as it is to walk in its direction, you know that God is for you, not against you, unlike the enemy that you're slowly leaving behind. And it's true that Pharaoh had let his people go, had let the Lord's people go. But of course, if you know this story, it isn't something that he did willingly. He had been broken by these plagues that had been inflicted upon Egypt and brought upon by his hard, godless heart. And eventually he gets to the point where he says, okay, enough is enough. I can't take any more. Leave. But if you know this story, you know Pharaoh. And we all know what they must have known, that Pharaoh's word meant very little. And his pride and his self-deifying madness would drive him towards destruction and pain and misery every time. And so each and every step forward for them into the hot sand is a step closer to the end of this nightmare. And so God's people, led by Moses and Aaron, are making their way out of Egypt, and they're walking towards freedom. They're walking towards a bright future, away from the anguish, away from the slavery, away from the suffering, away from the confusion of the last 400 years. I mean, where has God been all this time? Toward the promised land, into the arms of God himself. And so far, up to this point, everything seems to be going to plan. Everybody's excited to be leaving. Everything makes sense. Until verse 1 of chapter 14. Because in verse 1 of chapter 14, God instructs Moses to turn back. Tell the people of Israel to turn back. That's what God says to Moses, to turn around and head back in the way they've just come to this place called Pi-hahiroth, however you want to say that, and camp there. And this is crazy. This is crazy. God says, Moses, you know, the Exodus that are now on their way out, I want you to stop them, 2-3 million people, and not only tell them to stop, I want you to tell them to turn around and go back in the direction that they've just come from. I'm glad I didn't have to give that instruction. I struggle to get my 3-year-old to do what I say, even if there's chocolate being offered. Can you imagine? They were slaves. Their parents were slaves. Their grandparents were slaves. Their parents were slaves. This slavery has been going on for 400 years. Now they're free. Now they're going in the direction of freedom, away from slavery. And God says, I want you to stop and turn around and head back. But it gets worse. Because God says, when they get to Pi-hahiroth, between Migdol and the sea, in front of Baal Zephon, basically when they reach this cul-de-sac, where there's just one exit route back towards Egypt, when they're vulnerable, when they're in a place of helplessness, when they're in the last place in the whole world that they would ever want to be, when they don't feel safe, Moses, I want you to tell them to unpack their stuff, put up their tents, and wait. That's crazy. But that's what Moses does. He turns them around. He takes them back to this place. And they find themselves trapped between Pharaoh's army and the Red Sea. We read in verses 5-9 that once again, Pharaoh's heart is hardened by God. That was the cause of all the problem. That's why he wouldn't let them go. He wants his slaves back, and so he gathers his army together, and they go off in search of these slaves. And so you have the enemy of the people of God, and they're organized. They're a killing machine. They've got 600 chariots, massive advantage in battle, horses, this army. And on the other side of the spectrum, you have the people of God. Well, there's more of them, but they're no match for these soldiers. They're not really that organized. They're exhausted. They're hungry. They're thirsty. And although it tells us in verse 18 of chapter 13 that they were equipped for battle, it's a bit like Steve at Walshingfield. I can say this because he's not here. He's got all the gear, but not much idea sometimes. He's getting better, though. They have everything they need for battle, but they're not ready for war. They're not ready for war. And the Israelites, verse 10, they lift their eyes and they're frozen in that moment by what they see. They can't believe it. The Bible tells us they feared greatly. This is their worst case scenario, and there is no way that they can cross that sea. It's impossible. They look out and they see this massive expanse of water that's before them. The Red Sea, in some places, is 100 miles across. And their hearts just sink. You ever feel like that? When something comes into your life and you don't know how you're going to cope with it? You know, where they were actually situated, people estimate it would have been between 10 and 12 miles across and between 60 to 200 feet deep. Just impassable. They're surrounded by mountains, and behind them, Pharaoh's army is closing in quickly, so there's no way out of this predicament. And once again, as was true with them in the past and as is true with us, what they see with their eyes triumphs over their faith in God and in Moses. And they begin to buckle under the pressure and they give in to fear. And you know what? I don't blame them. We do the same when we're confronted with fear. We freak out and we forget who God is and we lose our focus. Verse 10 tells us they were very afraid. What do they do? they cry out to the Lord. That is a good thing to do when you're fearful. That's the only place to go when you're fearful. One of my favorite psalms is Psalm 121. And if your life is fearful right now, or you need a tonic, not an actual tonic, I'm not promoting alcoholism. Is tonic alcohol? I don't even know. That's how much I drink alcohol. But if you need something to counteract fear, Psalm 121 is great. Listen to what it says. I lift up my eyes to the hills. From where does my help come? My help comes from the Lord, who made heaven and earth. He will not let your foot be moved. He who keeps you will not slumber. Behold, he who keeps Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord is your keeper. The Lord is your shade on your right hand. The sun shall not strike you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will keep you from all evil. He will keep your life. The Lord will keep your going out and your coming in from this time forth and forevermore. That is a great promise. You see, even in the most difficult of times, what God says to us is, you can trust me. You can trust me. Why can you trust me? Because I made everything. Everything. You know, God never takes a day off from his care toward us. He's our keeper. He's our shade. In that psalm, five times the psalm uses the word keep. And it's a Hebrew word, shomar, and what it means is to hedge about, to protect, to guard. And that's what God does. So here they are, okay? Try and picture it. Once again, in what appears to be a really hopeless situation, and although they've just been rescued by the hand of the Lord, verses 10 to 12, that it shows us how easy it is for us to forget what God has done in the past. Look at their reaction toward Moses. It's almost funny. If it wasn't so serious, they say to him, is it because there are no graves in Egypt that you have taken us away to die in the wilderness? What have you done to us in bringing us out of Egypt? For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness. I mean, talk about putting your blame onto one person and forgetting all the works of God in the past. They're basically saying, you should have left us as slaves, Moses. You clearly don't know where you're going, what you're doing. I don't know why we ever listened to you. Now we're going to die, and it's all your fault. Verse 12, is not this what we said to you in Egypt? Leave us alone that we may serve the Egyptians. They never said that. For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness. You see what they're doing? They're already predicting what's going to happen. They're not waiting for God to work in their situation. They're not trusting God. They're not sitting back going, wonder what God's going to do. They're saying, we're doomed. We're all doomed. God's not big enough to deal with this. The problem here is they're looking at their circumstances from an earthly perspective, aren't they? And they're completely forgetting that it was God who brought them to this place. It wasn't Moses. Moses didn't bring them to this place. God led them here. And they asked him to do it. They cried out to God in their slavery, God, please hear us. And God heard their cry and he answered them. But you know what? Sometimes when we pray and we ask God to intercede in our situations, we don't like how he answers. They can't trust him with the answer. They can't grasp that God isn't limited by the natural. And you know what? I was thinking about this week. You know, God parting the waters. It sounds amazing, but you know what God could have done? If God wanted to keep them safe, he could have picked up 3 million Israelites, put them on the moon, put oxygen around the moon, and kept them there. He could have done that. He's God. What is this expanse of water to him? It's nothing. What is our biggest problem to God? I don't know what your problems are. To God, they're nothing. In Job 38, God is answering Job. Job going through terrible suffering. Reminds Job of just who he is and who he's contending with. Verse 4, God says, where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who stretched out the line upon it? On What were its basis sunk, or who laid its cornerstone when the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy? Or who shut in the sea with doors when it burst out from the womb, when I made clouds its garment and thick darkness its swaddling band and prescribed limits for it and set bars and doors and said, thus far shall you come and no farther, and here shall your proud waves be stayed. Verse 31, can you bind the chains of Pleiades or loose the cords of Orion? Can you lead forth the Maseroth in their season, or can you guide the bear with his children? Verse 35, can you send forth lightnings that they may go and say to you, here we are? In other words, God's saying, I did all of this. Look around you, Job. I did all of this. You know, here's my problem. This is what we see when we look at our problems. My problem is so big, and our view of God sometimes is so small. We need to remember who God is. Their response isn't based on faith in God, it's based on fear. They're so fearful in this moment. They're not thinking straight. They're not remembering what God has done, and they're making these crazy statements, and this is the reason God didn't take them via the land of the Philistines. He didn't do that. God said if they face war, they're not ready for war. And if they face something they're not ready for, they're going to retreat and go back to slavery. And that's what's happening here. God knows us better than we know ourselves. They're gripped with fear, and so in this moment, they'd rather go back to the slavery that they know than have faith. We do that. It's much easier for us to settle in our little corners in fear and not have faith. It's crazy to do that. Their fear is blinding them to the truths they know. What was the truth? Well, if they go back to Egypt, you know what? Slavery means death as well. It's not easy having faith, is it? It's easy for a preacher to stand and preach about, but it isn't easy having faith sometimes. It's not easy when you're in difficult situations, you're faced with a massive fear or a huge unknown, to say, God, I'm going to trust you with all of my heart. I don't know what tomorrow holds. I'm just going to deal with life one day at a time. You know, one day at a time is a phrase that God has impressed upon my heart over the last 12 months. And I really do believe that's a great focus for a Christian to have. You know, sometimes we feel like our situations are too big for us to handle, and we panic, and we think, well, okay, now it's time for me to retreat in my faith. But faith doesn't say give up. It says, hold on. Hold on, help is on the way. God's not going to leave you on your own. Faith enables us to go forward. Fear disables us. Faith gives hope, but fear kind of gives this hopelessness. We think nothing good can ever happen again. Faith sees possibilities. Fear says, don't look, cover your eyes. Faith brings assurance. Fear brings doubt and hesitation. Faith moves mountains, but fear buries you in a pit. Faith says, stand firm and see the salvation of the Lord. Fear says, give up. Faith says, remember the blessings of the past. Remember what God did yesterday, the day before, last year. Fear says, remember the hardships. Faith says, keep your eyes on Jesus. Fear says, look at all your problems. We need faith. We need to trust God, because God can be trusted. But you know, not everything he does in our lives makes sense. I wish it did, but it doesn't. You know, the mind of God is greater than yours and greater than mine. And what he does sometimes, it vexes us and confuses us. But you know what? That's okay. It's okay for God to work like that. You know, you imagine the rescue of God for the Israelites look different. You kind of think, well, why doesn't God just make it easy for them? Well, God doesn't make it easy for them for the same reason he doesn't make it easy for us. Because ultimately, God's preparing them, and he's preparing us. But they didn't know that. They didn't have a kind of spiritual manual that they're flicking through going, all right, what day is it? 22nd of February 2015. Oh, I see that today, what's the module? It's, we're going to be looking at handling impossible situations with trust and faith. This will be a good one. Oh, see, God's going to part the Red Sea and we're going to walk across on dry land. That will be cool. They didn't know that. This is life or death for them. We've got this book. We're like, oh, yeah, I see what happens. They didn't know that. We don't know what's coming tomorrow. This is where the rubber hits the road. Pharaoh and his army are closing in on them, and they're confident because they think they're cornered, and it's only a matter of time. That's what we read, and that's what they believed. But what we need to understand about the Israelites is where they are, they've been led to that place by God. It's not by coincidental wandering. It's not by Moses. Moses hasn't kind of wandered off onto the wrong path. God's placed them there. It's not a surprise to him. The cloud had led them there. God had led them there. You know, one of the verses that has shaped my ministry in the last 5 years is Jeremiah 29:11, where God says, I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you a hope and a future. And our plans go all over the place. God's plans are perfect. God's plans don't always make sense, but they're always for our good. We might not know about them, but God knows about them. And those plans are the best things that could happen to us. And sometimes it hurts. And sometimes we're heading towards what looks like a completely impassable sea that you're never going to get over. But God knows what he's doing. God's plans are always in advance. God wasn't surprised. Did you notice verse 3? God says, for Pharaoh will say of the children of Israel, they are bewildered by the land. The wilderness has closed them in. Then I will harden Pharaoh's heart so that he will pursue them, and I will gain honor over Pharaoh and over all his army, that the Egyptians may know that I am the Lord. And they did so. Everything that God said would happen, happened. This isn't God saying, I'm going to do this in their lives and we'll see what happens. He's not sitting back saying, I'll try this out in their lives, and I don't know what's going to take place. Maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. God knows what's going to happen. He knows at the end from the beginning. You try and get your head around this, he's outside of time. He knows your life and mine inside out. He knows your troubles. He knows your heartbreaks. Nothing is hidden from him. Nothing takes him by surprise. God doesn't ever wake up, and if he did, he would never wake up saying, huh, I can't believe that's happened to them today. Wasn't expecting that. I'll write that down in my diary. God knows about it. He always has. God says to Moses, listen, there's a plan. Pharaoh's going to hear that you're wandering back and forth in the desert, and he'll think, now's my chance. They're headed back to Baal Zephon. I'll trap them there. They won't escape. Moses, it is a trap, but it's not a trap for you. It's a trap for Pharaoh. See, God had it all arranged. And sometimes we have short-term memories when it comes to faith. We forget who God is and what he's able to do and what he did in the past. God's people have a bad memory. That's why they're afraid. That's the single reason why they're afraid. They've forgotten. Psalm 106, verse 7 to 8 tells us that. It says, our fathers in Egypt did not understand, God, your wonders. They did not remember the multitude of your mercies, but rebelled by the sea, the Red Sea. Nevertheless, he saved them for his name's sake, that he might make his mighty power known. Israel trusted God for their deliverance, but they couldn't trust God with their circumstances. They had human frailties like we do. They battled with the old man, just like we do. They grapple with fear over faith, just like we do. But it's not about them. It's not about how much faith they have. It's about who their faith is in. One of my heroes of the faith is Gladys Aylward. Did we do Gladys Aylward at camp? I can't remember. Sorry, putting you on the spot. Tell me later. Gladys Aylward, missionary to China. This is from her, I think one of her books, I'll read it to you. Was forced to flee in 1938 when the Japanese invaded Yangcheng. But she could not leave her work behind. With only one assistant, she led more than 100 orphans over the mountains toward free China. During Gladys's harrowing journey out of water on the Yangcheng, she grappled with despair as never before. After passing a sleepless night, she faced the morning with no hope of reaching safety. A 13-year-old girl in the group reminded her of their much-loved story of Moses and the Israelites crossing the Red Sea. "But I am not Moses," Gladys cried in desperation. "Of course you aren't," the girl said. "But Jehovah is still God." When Gladys and the orphans made it through, they proved once again that no matter how inadequate we feel, God is still God, and we can still trust him. God's plans, they don't always make sense. He knows those plans inside out, and you know, God just needs us to obey. God's answer through Moses to the murmuring Israelites is found at the beginning of verse 13. It says this: "Moses said to the people, 'Do not be afraid. Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you will see again no more forever. The Lord will fight for you, and you shall hold your peace.'" I love that phrase, "no more forever." It's like, you're not going to see them, and you're never going to see them again, even if you saw them again. It's like double stamping that finalization. That's the worst English in the world. God's instructions through Moses, fourfold, aren't they? Did you catch them? "Fear not." Really easy. So first of all, he says to the people, you don't need to be afraid. "Stand still. Stand firm. Have faith. Have confidence in who God is." Third of all, he says, "Watch. See what the Lord will accomplish for you today." In other words, in this battle, God doesn't need you to do anything. You just need to stand and watch him work. You need to trust him. You don't need to fight. Just get out of the way and watch God work. It's not about what you can do. It's about what God is able to do. And my favorite, keep silent. Hold your peace. I probably shouldn't say this because you probably record these, but I love my mum, but she's very good and effective at telling people about her ailments. That's the most political way I can put that, says the man who said he had a sore throat at the beginning of the service. Often the hardest thing for us to do in troubles and trials, we tell everybody because that's what we do. But, you know, sometimes the only one who can help us is God, and he already knows. Sometimes he's just waiting for us to stand still and trust him and watch and just let God work. God now speaks to Moses and says in verse 15 and 16, he says, "Why do you cry to me? Tell the children of Israel to go forward. But lift up your rod and stretch out your hand over the sea and divide it, and the children of Israel shall go on dry ground through the midst of the sea." Basically, God's saying, "Moses, why are you praying to me? Stop praying and start moving. There's a time to pray. But when we have direction from God, it's time to start moving and taking steps by faith, isn't it?" I love verse 19. It tells us that then the angel of God, who was going before the host of Israel, moved and went behind them, and the pillar of cloud moved from before them and stood behind them, coming between the host of Egypt and the host of Israel. The angel of God, same angel of God who met with Moses at the burning bush, God himself moves around to protect them, as does this pillar of cloud and fire. You see, they don't need God's guidance for this bit. The cloud and the fire have been guiding them, but now it's behind them. So, you know, is God saying, "I want you to go backwards?" Of course he's not. They don't need guidance for this bit. Now they can see the way they need to go. I mean, it's pretty obvious. They need something else. Faith and obedience. And so God is standing there. I kind of like to try and imagine this picture of this really angry, you might have seen the Prince of Egypt cartoons, you've got children. I quite like that because you've got, although it's pretty inaccurate, maybe I should stop talking. But I like to picture this army and they're trying as much as they can to get past God, but it's never going to happen. They're never going to get past him until his people are safe. And this is a picture of us. This is a picture of you if you're a Christian and of me. You know, whatever happens to us in life, if you're trusting in Christ as your Savior, nothing's going to defeat you ultimately. You're going to get there. You're going to see God. You're going to get to glory. The last thing I want to say is that God's plans aren't limited by what's possible. Because Moses, he walks towards this massive expanse of water. I wonder what was going through his mind. He knows what he's about to do. He's going to look ridiculous and maybe pointless, questionable. Millions of pairs of eyes on him. You can imagine what they're thinking. What on earth is he doing with his staff? And we read in verse 21 and 22, "Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind all that night, and made the sea into dry land, and the waters were divided. So the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea on dry ground, and the waters were a wall to them on their right hand and on their left." I read something recently that said to get 3 million people across that distance, that you would have to have them in that time frame, you'd have had to have them 3,000 people wide. That's a pretty impressive miracle. 3,000 people wide, 12 miles across, and the ground is bone dry. Nothing is left to chance. God cares about the details of our lives. And so they step out into this riverbed, and it's solid ground. On Christ, the solid rock I stand, all other ground is sinking sand. This should have been sinking sand, but they're trusting in God. And either side, you've got these walls of water, as high as you can see. It's fish swimming up, about going, "I'm sure I was swimming sideways. How am I swimming up?" And they walk across. And one by one, they make it to the other side. And you can still hear Pharaoh's army following, God luring them into this trap. But they keep on moving until at last everyone is safe. Let me ask you a question as I finish. What happened that day? Do you think it was last minute rescue by God? An oversight on God's part? "Oh no, I knew I shouldn't have sent them there. Didn't see that one coming." Or do you think it's God's perfect plan? You know, the coming to the Red Sea and the diversion that looked like a mistake on the part of God, the impossible situation they were placed in, the trials and the tribulations that come into our lives, the difficult days, the situations that we think, I don't know how I'm going to bear this, God. They're as much a part of God's plan for our salvation as crossing over. The Red Sea was the point. Why does God allow these things into our lives? We're simple. Because often, isn't that what it takes to force us to look up to him? We're pretty self, independent. That's the word I was looking for. We're pretty independent. But when we get into situations we can't deal with, it's then that we seek God. It's then that he works in powerful ways. No matter how inadequate we might feel, God is still God. And we can still trust in him. The Israelites, they had to trust God for their rescue. I guess the question we have to ask ourselves is, will we? Let's pray before we